Ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is a buzzsaw ripping through a painting of George Washington chopping down cherry trees. It's time for Professor Buzzkill, busting myths and taking names.
Yes, hello there, Buzzkillers. It's your favorite professor here, here to tell you that one of the losers in the 2016 presidential election has already been careful historical analysis. Easy and quick comparisons and conclusions drawn by media commentators have trampled on the subtleties and the complications of previous presidential election results, especially the relatively recent ones. As you know, Donald Trump has said in various ways that the 2016 election is already rigged and that he will not automatically concede if Hillary Clinton wins. Many journalists have jumped on the idea that Trump is being especially petulant even before Election Day, and that no presidential candidate from a respectable party in history has refused to concede an election once all the votes are in, tallied, and certified. And the most obvious example they cite is Republican Richard Nixon graciously conceding the ultra-close presidential election of 1960 to John Kennedy, even though there were suspicions of vote riggings in some states. Well, that's the myth we're busting today. Here's what happened in 1960. Everyone knew that the presidential race was going to be close. The candidates were not that different in terms of political ideology, age, and even in terms of experience. In fact, they had very similar backgrounds. Both were World War II Navy veterans. Both had entered Congress in 1946. Nixon was elected to the Senate in 1950, JFK in 1952, the same year that Nixon was picked as Eisenhower's vice presidential candidate. Their political differences were mostly a matter of degree. Both of them were vigorous anti-communists, and both generally agreed with the gradual expansion of government involvement in the economy. Their only real policy disagreement was over civil rights. Nixon was more of a gradualist who thought civil rights should evolve as a public opinion changed over the years, and JFK was in favor of government intervention in civil rights matters, but only when it was necessary, such as the stubborn refusal of some states and localities to integrate public schools. And finally, either man, Nixon or Kennedy, would have been the youngest elected president in American history after the results of the 1960 election were finalized. So what happened on Election Day, November 8th, 1960? Well, Senator Kennedy gained 34,220,984 votes nationwide. There's a reason I'm going to give you all these numbers in detail, Buzzkills, and you see that in a minute. That was 49.72% of the vote. Vice President Nixon for the Republicans received 34,108,157 votes, which is 49.55%. The raw number difference between the two was 112,827 votes. Not very much when you consider the whole country. And the percentage difference was only 0.17. Less, indeed, much less than 1%. Kennedy's victory in the Electoral College, which is technically what matters in electing president, was much greater. He received 303 electoral votes, and Nixon received 219. On the night of Tuesday, November the 8th, and well past midnight into the early hours of the 9th, the country watched the votes come in and watched them reported over the national media. Kennedy seemed to be winning clearly early on. Some television news reports had him winning by 52-48% with well over 350 electoral college votes. But as Western states and more rural electoral areas in the country started to report their vote totals after midnight, the race tightened up considerably. Still, Kennedy looked like he was headed for a victory, even if it was a slim one. At 4 a.m. on the 9th, at campaign headquarters in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, Vice President Nixon gave the following statement to his election team and supporters in front of the campaign's big chalkboard that had been tallying up the results. Here's what he said.
As I look at the board here, while there are still some results still to come in, if the present trend continues, if Mr. Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, will be the next president of the United States. I want Senator Kennedy to know, and I want all of you to know, that certainly if this trend does continue and he does become our next president, that he will have my wholehearted support.
Now, Buzzkillers, it's tough to find really high-quality audio of that statement, and as you hear, that there are interruptions by his supporters. So let me read out again what he said. As I look at the board here, that's the board where they had all the electoral results, while there are still some results to come in, if the present trend continues, Mr. Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, will be the next president of the United States. I want Senator Kennedy to know, and I want all of you to know, that certainly if this trend does continue and he does become our next president, that he will have my wholehearted support and yours too. Nixon heavily qualified this statement by saying twice that if the voting trend continues, Kennedy would win the election. This was not a direct concession of the election, as NBC's famous duo of respected newscasters Chet Huntley and David Brinkley said in their immediate reaction to Nixon's statement that night. They essentially didn't know whether Nixon had conceded or not.
I don't know whether that was a concession or not. Do you?
I suppose it was a concession, but I never heard one just like it before. What he said, well, everyone heard what he said. If the trends continue, Kennedy is the next president. It was the time for a concession or something, and I assume that was it. But choose your own name for it.
It wasn't until the afternoon of November 9th that Nixon sent JFK a telegram more or less conceding the election. Kennedy accepted it, as well as the good wishes from Eisenhower, the sitting president. And this is what he said. And by the way, I have to tell the younger buzzkillers, certainly those under 30 or maybe even under 40, that Kennedy often refers to a wire or wires in this statement. And those, of course, were the telegrams. Wire was one of the synonyms for telegrams in the old days when I was young.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've received the following wire from Vice President Nixon. In that wire, he says, Senator John F. Kennedy, Hyannisport, Massachusetts, I want to repeat through this wire the congratulations and best wishes I extended to you on television last night. I know that you will have the united support of all Americans as you lead the nation in the cause of peace and freedom during the next 4 years. In reply to the Vice President, I sent him the following wire. Vice President Nixon, Los Angeles, California. Your sincere good wishes are gratefully accepted. You are to be congratulated on a fine race. I know that the nation can continue to count on your unswerving loyalty in whatever effort you undertake, and that you and I can maintain our long-standing cordial relations in the years ahead. Sincerely, John Kennedy. I received also a wire from President Eisenhower, which says, my congratulations to you for the victory you have just won at the polls. I will be sending you promptly a more comprehensive telegram suggesting certain measures that may commend themselves to you as you prepare to take over next January the responsibilities of the presidency, signed Dwight D. Eisenhower. And I have sent to President Eisenhower the following wire. I am grateful for your wire and good wishes. I look forward to working with you in the near future. The whole country is hopeful that your long experience in the service of your country can be drawn upon further in the years to come. With every good wish, signed, John Kennedy.
It would seem to us that this was the end of it. But as you know, the historians here at the Institute are tireless in their efforts to examine the history of these events as completely as we can. Nixon's telegram of November 9th certainly gives the impression that his concession was delayed by the closeness of the race, but that he finally accepted the nation's decision by the afternoon of the 9th, after the election was over. But if we only look at those public statements, we get an overly shallow view of what happened in November 1960. A more careful examination of the full history of those days, which was heavily reported in reputable newspapers and other sources at the time, shows us a much more complicated and contested picture. And we'll get to that right after a message from Harry's Razors, our new sponsor. Harry's charges a fraction of what the ripoff razor companies charge, and the good folks at Harry's mail the razors right to you on a regular basis. and it's a schedule that you set up when you set up your membership. Harry's five-blade razors now include a softer flex hinge for more comfortable glide, trimmer blade for hard-to-reach places, which I use all the time, lubricating strip, and a textured handle for more comfort and control when it's wet. Their prices are just still $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more that you'll pay at the drugstore. How do they do this? By owning the factory in Germany where they make the blades, Harry's can produce high-quality razors themselves and sell them online for half the price of those rip-off razors. Now, Harry's has a special offer for you buzzkillers out there. They'll send you their popular trial set for free when you go to harrys.com. The free trial set comes with a razor, five-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. You just pay a pittance for shipping. It's $3. Plus, just for my listeners, enter the code BUZZKILL, B-U-Z-Z-K-I-L-L, at checkout, and you'll get their post-shave balm for free with your order. The post-shave balm is great. I use it. Nixon should have used it. It's fantastic. You'll look better, and your face will feel better all day when you put it on. Let me repeat that. Go to harrys.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Enter the code BUZZKILL, two Z's, two L's, at checkout. You'll get a razor, a great razor, blades, shave cream, and the post-shave balm. Do it now, buzzkillers. Harrys.com, code at checkout is BUZZKILL. Now back to that contested election. Okay, back to November 1960. Essentially what happened was this. Beneath the calm-ish surface at Nixon headquarters in L.A. on election night, the Republican National Committee was frantically trying to understand how Nixon could have lost. And at the same time, they were getting lots of anecdotal reports that votes had been bought or stolen or faked in Illinois and in Texas. The power and influence of Democratic Mayor Richard Daley and his political machine was rumored to have fixed the vote for Kennedy in Chicago. And Lyndon Johnson, Kennedy's running mate, was suspected of rigging the vote in important parts of Texas. Both states had gone for Kennedy the night of November 8th. Throughout November, Republican operatives and fellow politicians urged Nixon to contest the election. This was more or less obvious at the time because the press reported the Republican investigation of vote counts in many precincts of Cook County, which is Chicago, and in some districts in suburban Houston and in Dallas, in Texas. It's also clear that President Eisenhower initially urged Nixon to mount legal challenges in several states, although he, that is Eisenhower, quickly changed his mind and argued for a full concession. But other prominent Republicans, such as Senator and RNC Chairman Thurston Moorton from Kentucky, as well as the majority of the upper echelons of Nixon's campaign staff, pressed for legal challenges to the electoral results in many states. Some of these legal challenges went ahead, and grand juries in certain localities agreed to investigate potential election fraud. The investigation in Chicago, for instance, revealed that 943 Republican votes had not been counted. But that wasn't nearly enough to overturn Kennedy's majority statewide, which was roughly 9,000 votes. Similar minor differences were shown in some Texas electoral districts, but they were thrown out by higher courts, even though Republicans kept mounting appeals to higher and higher courts. They were all dismissed for lack of evidence of fraud or vote rigging. But the Republican National Committee continued to fight for a recount up until the day the Electoral College certified Kennedy's election. That was December 19th. Nixon, wisely, gave the public appearance that he was above the fray and he was not in favor of contesting the election. Further, Nixon's subsequent interviews and his memoirs claimed that Eisenhower kept urging him to challenge the result and that Nixon himself did not approve of the RNC's efforts to fight the election in the courts. This version of the story has not only won the day in the public mind, it's also been accepted, repeated, and retailed by popular historians and media talking heads ever since. Excellent work done by lots of historians, especially Professor David Greenberg at Rutgers, has shown that Nixon not only allowed the RNC to continue its extensive investigation in 11 states, he was in favor of challenging the result until it became too obvious that a challenge wouldn't work. And by the way, 11 states, it's not just Illinois and Texas, it's right, buzzkillers. The RNC looked into these states as well, Delaware, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, New Mexico, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina. The Republican challenge was extensive, even though it lasted only 6 weeks. But it was precisely because the Republicans, like all modern political parties, had enough operatives to mount challenges on the ground, at local election boards and in courts in many states, that Nixon could maintain the image that he didn't have to sully himself with contesting the election and looking like a sore loser. Right? Let the election workers do that. Let the Republican operatives do that. Nixon couldn't maintain his calm, accepting public image. But that, of course, sharpens the point that there was a public Nixon response to the election and a private Nixon / RNC response to the election. One public, one private. Now, naturally, if there had been reliable evidence of voter fraud or ballot counting errors as November and December rolled along, the qualified nature of Nixon's concession statements right after the election, you know, if the present trend continues, if the present trends do indeed continue, would have given him the genuine cover he needed to contest the election personally. And he had every rational reason to reserve that right, even if he hadn't been so careful in choosing his words. After all, the voters decide who wins Democratic elections. One candidate conceding an election to another candidate isn't the official end of the election. The final and official vote tally is. But even that's not the end of the story, Buzzkillers. We spend a lot of time at the Institute and on these episodes examining the motivations and the private actions of politicians and other actors on the historical stage. We find that, like everybody else, what they often say or do publicly is a lot different from what they say or do privately. And frankly, one of the most responsible things historians can do is point this out in an attempt to encourage people to think more carefully before they go about canonizing all these historical figures. But I want to complicate things even more, Buzzkillers. As we know, although there was a great deal of scrambling, grousing, second-guessing, scheming, and undoubtedly cursing behind the scenes on election night in 1960, it's worth remembering that the public statements of both candidates in the aftermath of the election were cordial, formal, and fundamentally decent. On a public level in 1960, there was none of the extreme inflammatory political rhetoric about the system being rigged that we hear too often nowadays. And there's precious little evidence from 1960 that anyone bought into the "if so-and-so wins, I'm moving to Canada" sentiment that we've been subjected to every presidential election for the last 20 years or so. Perhaps there was and is a place for recognizing the value of the grown-up and measured tone of the public statements made by Nixon, Eisenhower, and Kennedy in that November. Perhaps it took enough of the edge off the close election result to prevent tempers from getting genuinely out of control. And perhaps we should be reminded of that more often. Another example of this moderate tone can be found in the continuation of the remarks that Kennedy made during the afternoon of November 9th after he accepted the public best wishes of Nixon and Eisenhower. JFK wasn't overly triumphant, not surprising since the election results were so close, but his statement was measured in other ways too. Rather than crowing or promising rosy days ahead, Kennedy stressed reality, stressed hardship, and the challenges facing the country in the 1960s.
May I say, in addition to all citizens of this country, Democrats, Independents, Republicans, regardless of how they may have voted, that it is a satisfying moment to me, and I want to express my appreciation to all of them and to Mr. Nixon personally. I particularly want to thank all those who worked so long and so hard in this campaign on our behalf and who were generous to me in my visits throughout the country and who were generous enough to support me in the election on yesterday. To all Americans, I say that the next 4 years are going to be difficult and challenging years for us all. The election may have been a close one, but I think that there is general agreement by all of our citizens that a supreme national effort will be needed in the years ahead to move this country safely through the 1960s. I ask your help in this effort, and I can assure you that every degree of mind and spirit that I possess will be devoted to the long-range interests of the United States and to the cause of freedom around the world.
avoiding dire and childish predictions for the future and toning down the technicolor extremes of our political rhetoric might make our current elections less exciting on the public level. But it might also be enough to convince many of us to start acting like grown-ups again. And there's certainly something to be said for that. Talk to you next week, Buzzkillers.